Want to virtualize your biggest workloads? Bring the performance of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Hey everybody, welcome back for another episode of TechNet Radio. Today we're going to be kicking off a new series around Hyper-V administration from a VMware or experienced virtual systems administrator's perspective. And through this episode, I've got my good friend Andy Serwich with me, who will be co-hosting the episode. Hi Andy, how are you today?
Good, how's it going, Keith?
Very good. Well, thanks for joining us today. And for the benefit of our audience, could you spend just a few minutes introducing yourself and your organization and talking a little bit about your background from a virtualization standpoint?
Absolutely. Sure. So again, thanks for having me on the show, Keith. My name is Andy Serwich. Again, I work for Trivalent Group Incorporated, a company based out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. I work for them in a virtual systems administrator capacity. Now, Trivalent Group is an IT services provider in the Michigan area, and we provide products and services primarily so our customers can manage, access, protect, and store their data. That's kind of our mantra, and kind of the way we do business. We do that via a number of different services, whether it's kind of a professional services consulting capacity, or a full-blown managed services capacity, or ISP and or cloud services as well. So that's kind of how we kind of do it all, per se.
So you must have a pretty complex data center environment that a lot of the hosting pieces.
Absolutely. It can certainly get complex at times. The back ends, there's a lot of hands in it all the time, and certainly requires several folks to keep a handle on it.
And you've been doing this for a while, so I imagine you probably started off in the VMware side, is that right?
Absolutely, correct. Yeah. Yep. Back in 2007, I kind of started back in the VMware 3.0, 3.5 days.
Gotcha.
Tinkered a little bit back with the old Microsoft Virtual PC, if you remember that. So I had a little bit of experience with that, and kind of slowly over the years, I've kind of become a Hyper-V convert, per se. There was a day I had kind of an epiphany. I'm just like, this Hyper-V thing looks pretty cool. I think I'll check it out. Started reading up on it and, haven't looked back since. So.
Well, awesome. And I know as you were going through that transition process of learning more about Hyper-V, there's probably a lot of things that in your daily job you had been doing on the VMware side, and some Correct. Of which you may have just kind of taken for granted that VMware could do, and coming over to Hyper-V, there's probably a little bit of a learning curve of getting up to speed on those areas initially. If you think about kind of that process you went through, what was kind of one of the top areas that you initially were really interested in from a Hyper-V standpoint when you started evaluating the product?
Well, I wanted to make sure that Hyper-V could do all the same things that VMware could do. In our data center environment, with as many customers as we have in there, we really have to make sure that we can respond to any customer need at the drop of a hat, whether it's adding a proc here or removing some memory here or, moving this VM over here, moving this VM here. We have to have that flexibility to be able to respond to needs, immediately. So that was certainly one of the larger points of evaluation testing.
Sure. So kind of the hot management of VM hardware resources and whatnot, so that you didn't necessarily have to always reboot a VM, because you probably can't do that for a lot of your customers.
Exactly.
Just to give them more processor. Yeah, definitely.
The second question most customers ask after the initial question is this going to require any downtime? And, as a service provider, you love to be able to go to them and say, no, Mr. Customer, we're going to be able to take care of this for you without any downtime. So that's definitely a big win for us.
Sure, definitely. And I know, on the VMware side, because I've I kind of grew up on the VMware side myself initially, early on in the early days. The ability to hot add some of those resources sometimes is a little challenging based on the guest operating systems that
you might be running
inside the VM. So, you know, not all guest operating systems know how to understand that there's a new processor or more memory or less memory to take advantage of. And oftentimes, even if VMware allows you to do that, I've seen issues where you may still need to restart the application or restart the OS inside the VM on certain cases in order for it to get this to realize those new resources or the resource changes. Have you seen the same thing as well in some of your customer environments that you're hosting?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, not all guest OSs are created equally.
Yeah, right, definitely.
You know, even back with the Windows 2003 days, you know, you couldn't grow system volumes on the fly. You know, I think I see that change being one of the more frequent changes that we make. We have a customer say, yo, help, I'm running out of disk space. It's so nice to be able to go in there, tack on disk space to the virtual disk, and then at the OS level, grow it on the fly like you could with 2008 and newer. So that's certainly a big benefit, and not all OSs can do that.
Right, yeah, definitely. And I've seen the same thing with, you know, older or different distros on the Linux side as well,
yep.
Where sometimes certain distros can and others can't. So,
yep.
And I think as I started looking at the hot management of VM resources on the Hyper-V side, that really I came to realize that that's one of the changes that our Hyper-V team took on a little differently, where instead of trying to be as technical and invasive into the VM as perhaps VMware tries to do with processor and memory resources, we take a little bit softer approach in terms of how we allocate those resources, but provide better across-the-board compatibility with the various guest operating systems that we're running. So what do you think, and does it make sense to maybe drop into our lab environment together and show everybody the processes that we can use for hot management of some of these VM resources on Hyper-V?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Well, hey, Andy, here we are over in our lab environment with Windows Server 2012 R2 Hyper-V, and we're looking at Hyper-V Manager as one of the tools that IT pros can use for managing a Hyper-V environment. Hyper-V Manager is kind of one of our entry-level tools, but we also have the Failover Cluster Manager for clustered Hyper-V server environments, and then for larger enterprise management of lots of clusters or lots of servers, we also have System Center 2012 and Virtual Machine Manager. So all of those same tools can do hot management of VMs and resources. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go over to one of my hosts. So Hyper-V Manager, pretty much all of our tools allow for multi-host management of various hypervisors from a single interface. And SQL Server tends to be a Microsoft workload that oftentimes is one that you have to allocate more processor or memory resources or disk resources to. So it's a good example. I've got a VM that's running SQL 2012. And with any of our VMs, you notice it's in a running state. With any of our VMs, we can just right-click and drop into Settings. And we have our virtual hardware here. And you'll notice initially, if we look at memory, I'm just going to go down the list here, that we're using a feature that we launched back in the Windows Server 2008 R2 days called Dynamic Memory. Dynamic Memory is the tool that we use for enabling hot management of memory allocations, because it allows us, rather than having just a fixed amount of memory, it allows us to assign a minimum amount that we always want to ensure the VM has, and then a maximum amount where if the VM has pressure, where it needs more memory and there's memory available on the host, it can grow up to that. But what this also allows is the ability to hot manage the minimum and maximum amounts. So even though the VM is running, I can make the minimum amount a little lower, or if I wanted to allocate a little bit more from a maximum amount, maybe I want to go from 12 to 16 gigs, I can up that as a higher amount of maximum RAM, all while the VM is running. So the way that this dynamic memory works is we also have this startup memory. That's what we initially assign the VM when it starts up. And then Hyper-V watches the VM as it starts up. It has all its services inside the VM start, and it tries to settle down a bit in terms of its memory consumption. Hyper-V will start it up with, in this case, 8 gigs of memory, and then try to pedal it back down towards that minimum amount if it can, if the VM, if the applications in the VM aren't using all the memory. And when there's memory pressure, pedal it back up to the maximum amount. So we can go ahead and apply that.
You know, that's, that really is a great feature because, you know, from a service provider perspective, you know, how often do you have a customer or you've got the SQL guy or the Exchange guy that comes and says, you know, I need X number of memory. You know, I can't ever have less than this amount. Well, you know, come to find out after the fact, you know, the server is consuming, you know, a third of what he thinks it should have. So
exactly.
It's really nice to be able to conserve the memory, you know, even though it looks, you know, to the customer that it has, you know, what they're paying for or, you know, what they think they need. But Hyper-V scales it back down in the back end and gives you that memory back. So
absolutely.
It's certainly nice from that perspective.
Particularly as IT pros start thinking more and more about kind of pooling of their resources, their hardware resources, trending down a path where you're not statically allocating or over-allocating memory or processor or whatnot is, like you said, it's a great plus because it allows you to create more density. And with a lot of our customers just moving to Server 2012 Hyper-V, we've seen densities in a lot of customer organizations double or in some cases triple by leveraging some of these features where it makes sense. Now, certainly you could always, if you have critical applications that the IT manager comes down and says, no matter what, this application, I always want to guarantee it. You can turn off dynamic memory, but if you leave it on, it gives some great flexibility.
Exactly.
Similarly, over on the processor side, if I click over here for processors, you'll notice that I've got four virtual CPUs that are currently associated with this running SQL server. So when you look inside the VM, it'll show in Task Manager or Performance Monitor four CPU cores. But what I can do hot is I can raise or lower a virtual machine limit as a percentage. So what this allows me to do is even though I've got four CPUs assigned to it, I can say only use the equivalent of 25% of one core of those four CPUs for how much processor time it gets. So right now I've got that VM with the processor resources essentially of one core, and if I wanted to give it the equivalent of two cores, I could raise that percentage from 25% of four cores to 50% of four cores and apply that. And just like that, without any changes in the OS, now I've got double the processor capacity that Hyper-V is assigning to that VM without having to worry about, does my OS inside the guest support recognizing processors that were hot added or whatnot? I can also lower that back down again at a later point. So if I decide, hey, the busy time is over and I want to readjust that back down and reallocate those resources elsewhere, I can certainly do that again, all without having to turn the VM off.
I think that's really the key in this situation. You can make changes to that without the customer knowing or your end users knowing, you know, without any impact to them. You know, that's a big win in the IT world. So
yeah, you don't have to worry about the developers or application administrators coming over to you screaming, "Hey, what happened? You took two processors away," or
yeah,
"I want two more processors," or something along those lines.
Exactly. Well, on the flip side, though, you know, if you've assigned, you know, the higher amount, you know, they can gain access to the higher end of that range too if the machine really requires it.
Yeah, definitely.
So it does go both ways, and it's very helpful in that regard.
Definitely, yep. And so that's from memory and processor. Those are some good points to think about as you're starting to provision new VMs. You know, start thinking about it more as a dynamic pool of resources on the VM basis. For hard disks, we can drop down to our virtual SCSI hard disks. And actually, with Windows Server 2012 R2, we've introduced a new type of VM, a new generation of VM, Gen 2 VMs that can actually boot from virtual SCSI hard disks. So we've got the ability now to do away with IDE-based hard disks for even the boot device. The benefit that virtual SCSI gives in terms of Hyper-V is the ability to hot add new hard drives on the fly. So I can go down to my virtual SCSI controller with this running VM and be able to add a new virtual hard disk or a pass-through disk, as well as another new feature in Server 2012 R2, being able to resize virtual hard disks on the fly. So I've got this virtual SCSI hard disk, and that's already attached on the running VM, and if I go in to edit it, you'll see I can step through the process of expanding that out, hot hot expanding the amount of disk space it has access to. I can also compact it down and shrink it down to a lower amount of disk space. So right now it's 128 gig. I could give it 140 gig and step through the process and just a few moments. Now my virtual hard disk is resized. If I go in the VM, I'd see that additional disk space that I could use to extend the partition and volumes on my VM over to that amount of disk space. So that gives me a lot of additional capabilities. And that resizing is actually something, if you think about it, that's a little more flexible on the Hyper-V side than it is with VMware, because in the VMware world, I can hot expand virtual hard disks on the fly, but you really can't hot shrink them back down. You have to shut down the VM and be able to shrink down the hard disk.
Yeah, and I think that's the big differentiator between Hyper-V and VMware, is that ability to shrink. You know, as a Hyper-V convert, I was really, really happy to see that they finally added this feature, because, you know, as any VMware admin knows, you know, this is a feature that VMware's had for a while, but, you know, like Keith mentions, you don't have the ability to shrink, to hot shrink, like you do here in Hyper-V now.
Yep, definitely. And then, you know, networking is another resource that, while it may not be as commonly adjusted as disk, memory, and processor, when I was out in the field, I still had lots of times where I wanted to be able to take a running VM that maybe was on a development or a test network, and got the green light to move it over into production and be able to just switch it over from one virtual network to another, move it into production. I can go ahead and apply that on the fly. I can move it onto a separate VLAN on the fly. If it's a virtual machine that has heavy network traffic or sensitive network bandwidth, I can apply bandwidth management on the fly for minimum and maximum network QoS for traffic going in and out of that VM. So we can go ahead and apply that. I actually have to set a minimum or maximum, so we'll set it to 10 megabits, apply that. And then in addition, as we go down to our advanced features, I also have the ability to turn on and off some security features on the fly as well. That in the VMware world, you know, some of this requires extra add-on products to provide security around guarding against rogue DHCP traffic that a VM might be trying to spew out, or a VM that somebody set up a router, like routing and remote access inside. So I can turn those security features on and off on the fly as well. So that way, if I'm hosting VMs for a bunch of users, I don't have to worry, with these features enabled, about having someone accidentally set up a DHCP server and it's starting to lease IP addresses inappropriately across its virtual network and whatnot. So I'll go ahead and apply all those features and OK. And we'll see down on the bottom here, it's going to reflect our changes that we made while we had the running VM. So we got 16 gigs of maximum memory over on the networking side. You see it switched over to the new network that we had connected it to. One last networking change that's new with Server 2012 R2 is also the ability to more granularly set security, ACLs, access control lists, on the fly on any network adapter inside of a VM. Now, that's an area where we today need to drop into PowerShell. PowerShell kind of is becoming, for network ACLs on Hyper-V, sort of our Hyper-V version of like a Cisco IOS type of command line language that you'd use in the physical router or firewall world. So one of the additions that we've made in R2 is the ability to be able to define extended ACLs to permit or deny network traffic, where we have the ability to allow or deny using the add or remove VM network adapter extended ACL commandlet with the action parameter. We can set it to allow or deny particular inbound or outbound traffic by using the direction parameter. We can specify local and remote ports, protocols, weights, and we can even turn on stateful observation, much like a basic stateful firewall might do, of keeping those ports open only while there's an active session that's going on. So we can add all of these on the fly. We can get them and see what they are. We can remove them on the fly. Again, being able to control and isolate different departments from one another, different customers from one another, isolating dev from test, from production networks, traffic very easily, without having to restart VMs and interrupt users' access to their applications. What do you think, Andy? Does this stuff make sense from what you see in the field typically?
Absolutely. The ability to change all this stuff, you know, on the fly is really the key point here. You know, without having to interrupt the customer or the end users, that's the other main point. It's all good stuff. Absolutely. Right.
So in today's episode, we were looking at the hot management of VM resources, processor, memory, disk, and network resources with our good friend Andy. And Andy, thanks again for joining us today. I really appreciate your insight on the important areas that you've been seeing as you've transitioned over to kind of a dual hypervisor environment supporting VMware and Hyper-V.
Correct. Thank you for having me, Keith. Appreciate the opportunity.
Sure. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today as well. I hope that you'll join us for future episodes in this series. Coming up in our future episodes, we'll be talking about other key areas as well. In fact, Andy mentioned one of those earlier in this episode today around live migration of VMs. And so in our next episode specifically, we'll be tackling live migration and see how that works in Hyper-V, as well as looking at some of the additional advantages that Hyper-V gives us, particularly in Server 2012 R2, when we think about live migration over your traditional VMware environments that you may be running today. In addition, between now and our next episode, there's some great resources available for you to learn more. If you look down the page, you'll find links to my blog and to Andy's blog for more information on Windows Server 2012 R2 and Hyper-V. I'd encourage you to leverage our blogs as resources. You can also contact us through our blogs via comments or email right through our blogs. And look forward to hearing any questions that you may have between now and the next time we're together on TechNet Radio. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.